This CD is a production of All Roads Ministry, or ARM. It is a recording of a discussion that took place in the spring of 2005 in Louisville, Kentucky. The discussion was supposed to revolve around what it means to be Catholic. However, many other issues arose, which are addressed by Vin Lewis, founder and president of ARM. As always, we hope that you enjoy this CD and benefit from it. Thank you for listening.
Okay, what I would like to do is I would like everyone to be involved in this conversation, okay, if that's possible. So basically what we're talking about here today, with the president of ARM, Vin Lewis, we have in company, in polite company I might say, Richard Roselli, Brett Flowers, we have Mr. Brindle and Mrs. Brindle, David Brindle, I should be more precise, and of course Sarah Brindle, thank you. We have Ernie Flores, we have Mike Hall, we have Mary Ellen Yu. Okay, and we have anybody else? No, that's it.
Dominic.
That's right. So what I want to talk about is the fact that we are all practicing Catholics. Now I wonder. I mean, can we assume that for one moment?
Sure.
Can we? Okay, let's do that. Hypothetically, let's go ahead and assume that. Okay. And I guess okay, that is a risky assumption. Right? It's not.
I think we're all Catholic.
Okay. Because I feel very Catholic. As
you're
I,
never going to get anywhere if you stop or
not. I'm sorry. Let me move on. Okay. All right, so the point of it is, we understand what objective truth is. We can identify it. We can qualify it. We can quantify it. We can say, okay, this is what is true in terms of what it is to be Catholic, right? However, as we sit here right here now, we have different perspectives and different understandings, perhaps, as we internalize what it is to be Catholic, this objective truth that we all agree with, but we are interpreting it differently. So what I'm talking about is either a subjectivism or I'm talking about a social construct. And what I mean by that social construct is that society being what it is and we living in society, we take reality and we, through our subjective lens, we process it differently. It's all processed somewhat differently. So while we say we're all Catholic, we have members of a church here who are not connected with the Archdiocese of Louisville, okay, who have a lot of issues with the post-conciliar church, if that'd be fair to say, and some big disagreements with our current, well, no longer our current, our Holy Father just passed away. But the past, yes, he's dead.
Yes, he
died.
So you're all conscious.
Well, all right. So anyway, but right.
Very good.
I guess that could be a point. So then we have...
Carl Wojcicki, 1979.
Carl Wojcicki, 1978. So again, you know, we have different understandings in terms of how we internalize this objective truth. So I kind of like to just start on that notion. I mean, we want to have communion, right? We want to have a sort of a centered understanding of what it is to know truth. But yet, we have this, you know, constant... is it hot? Is it too hot here?
I'm sorry.
You're sweating.
Yeah, we're sweating.
Yeah. So I guess I just kind of want to open that up. How can we, is there a way, I guess this would be the question to open up this conversation, is there a way to clarify our subjective lens and try to have more of a commonality in terms of what it is to be Catholic?
You sound like the last stages of the rendezvous. What you said was a bunch of nonsense.
Why?
Because you don't subjectively internalize truth. The faith consists of a series of every simple declarative statements, which are all completely understandable.
Okay, that's true. Wait, can I stop right there for one second? Because I absolutely agree with that. But how we interpret it is going to be different.
No,
hence
exactly the
problems in the church.
God is triune. You may not understand what the Trinity means, but you can say that's true, and there's no way to interpret it. It's true or false, you accept or reject.
I agree with that. Now I'm talking as we live it out, as we live out our daily lives.
After you live out your daily life, the Trinity doesn't come into anything.
Okay, I agree.
There's no way to live the Trinity. It is simply something you check on a true and false test. St. Bernard was confronted by Abelard, you know, the philosopher, and they were supposed to debate something, and St. Bernard at some council or conference got up and said, the faith is to be accepted, not debated. That was his whole argument. He sat down. It's a very interesting point. What you're talking about, I think, is perhaps individual lives and individual aspects of morality and concepts of what's better and what's worse. Once again, in my opinion, things become extremely clear. As I always joke, I'm not a moral theologian because I'm not a moral person. However, you can clarify my morality very simply. Do a good thing for a good reason. Period. That's it. End of discussion. The book's closed. Now, the next book might say, pick those things you like to do, which are good. And have as much... It's very simple. You're on earth to save your soul and have as much fun while doing it as possible.
Love God and do what you will, St. Augustine.
Yes. But love God and have fun. Ben Lewis. Okay. But I mean that sincerely. I mean that utterly sincerely. I think we have an obligation to enjoy what the creature comforts that God has put on this earth. And I've dealt with this before.
There you go.
You have an obligation to try. You have an obligation to try to be happy. The old Baltimore Catechism, I think, was incomplete in one of the areas which most people consider complete. Why did God make you? To know, love, and serve Him in this world, be happy with Him in the next. Should be know, love, and serve, and be happy in this world, and be happy with Him in the next. And I think this was one of the points about Kanizny, which was wonderful. Here was a man who generally sought out happiness pretty much every moment of his life. And when he decided that certain forms of happiness were inappropriate, he cut it off immediately and sought other forms. But the point is, I still think it comes down to that. I think what you're doing is trying to over-intellectualize things. You're probably over-examining things instead of simply relaxing, having a hot dog, and watching a ball.
Well, wait a second, then let's be fair. I'm not doing it. I mean, let's look at the church.
It sounded to me like you were doing it.
Okay, I think what I'm doing is I'm rationalizing only because I'm looking at the church around me and looking at people in general, and I'm seeing all this. I mean, why can't everyone have that concept and that construct of it?
Okay, sometimes people ask me what church I go to, and they tell that during the week I go to my local parish, which I gather from having some knowledge of the church in general, the condition of the churches in America, that is, the individual parishes, I'd say it's above average. Now, you made a very interesting statement, and it was when I looked at the church around me. And a lady who unfortunately died recently used to go to my church, even though she was in a different parish, and I would meet her on occasion, you know, outside, because we were friends, and she would say things with me like, well, another friend of mine, sometimes she'd even call me on the phone and say, did you notice that woman in front of me who did this? And I said, no. And he said, well, how could you not notice? I said, my eyes were shut. I sit in the first row, look at the priest, nobody else. When I get up to receive communion, I use my bad eye, for which I can hardly see anything. I frequently bump into people. But you know what? This way I don't notice what they're wearing. I don't notice what they're doing. I don't notice the points of sacrilege. I ask you a very simple question. If what you're seeing bothers you, why don't you shut your eyes? And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. God is the two greatest gifts God has given us, physically, not the loss of the Blessed Mother, are eyelids and short memories. Thank God we forget almost everything. And thank God we can just shut our eyes and hope it goes away. Because you know what? That's my solution to almost everything. Shut my eyes and hope it goes away. And very frequently, it goes away. And if you shut your eyes to begin with, you won't notice it. And you won't get upset. And as they say, thank God I can't remember things. When people say, oh, my memory's going, I'm saying, I hope it goes more. Because don't pick out the things which annoy you, because your obligation is to seek happiness. Now, if you want to get into examination of what's wrong, examination of conscience before confession, that's good. If someone asks you for help or you're in an authority position over someone, that's good too. Otherwise, don't bother. Why? Not doing you any good. You know, the only reason you go to a gym and lift weights is because in the long run, you think it's benefiting you. Because of your heart or muscle condition or something else, or keeping your cholesterol down, all of that makes sense. But that's the only reason to go there and sweat and strain and go through the pain. No pain, no gain. Okay, I agree with that. But how about all pain, no gain? Doesn't make any sense to me. It's a form of masochism. It's a form of spiritual masochism. I have said before, I say it again, I said it with on the radio, that I think this is the golden age of the church. I think things have never been better. And, you know, people shocked all the time. Things have never been worse. And I said, well, you know, part of it might be because I have an intentionally Pollyannish attitude and look at only the good things. I intentionally try to look at the good things. I still remember the story. I was playing racquetball with somebody who, again, attended my parish church at sometimes. I don't know if he was an actual member. Maybe people liked my church. That's why they went there. Or maybe they were attracted by me. Okay. But at any rate, he said, did you hear about, and I had heard someone sort of start the same story at the church, these two people who, and I said, stop. And he said, why? I said, because I know it's bad news and I can't do anything about it and I don't want to hear it.
Good.
And he said, no, you, I said, no, I don't want to hear it. And this dawned
calumny.
On me.
Calumny, it has to be calumny.
No! It wasn't calumny. I believe it was a situation of like a terrible accident. And I remember myself when this first struck
me.
What?
You could pray for them.
Sure, I can pray for lots of people, but you see what I'm saying is, I don't want any more depression, okay? I have, my prayer life is essentially free form. I'll assign some relatives. What I say to God is, any merits I get, you distribute them the way you think they should be done. You're a lot smarter than I am, okay? Take into account my father, my grandmother, and stuff like that. But after that, do what you think is right, okay? And I remember I was in a dentist chair, and I was waiting for something to take effect, so the dentist of the went out of the room so I could listen to the conversation in the other room. In the other room, it was in winter, and it was New York, and it was a heavy snowstorm, and I'm not going to give the details, and I don't think I remember them, but it's not the point. Is some horribly tragic accident happened involving a small child in the snow. And my first reaction was, why are these people spreading this? And my second one was, who can I tell? And then I said, I am these people. I said, my first instinct was to let me go and tell this interesting story to somebody. And I said, well, I've depressed them too. And I realized, I am they. They are I. And I said, not anymore. And so therefore, I do the metaphorical eye shut. Don't look at the things that bother you. You know, like, again, people have said to me, do you know how many people are leaving the church in Brazil every day? I said, no, and I don't care because I'm not in Brazil. And I'm not one of the ones leaving. And you know what? I got enough problems saving my own soul. So don't give me any bad news. There was a song in the musical, The Wiz, the Broadway play at least, where the Wiz, which is a big, heavy, fat black woman, comes out on the stage and she keeps saying, don't give me any bad news. And when I leave on trips like this, I ask people to watch things. And one of the things I tell them is, if it's bad news and I can't do anything about it, don't tell me.
You said it to me.
Yeah, don't tell me. I don't want to hear it. Okay? And I even say, no matter what it is, if it's bad news and I can't do anything about it, don't tell me, even if it's, even if I'm home. I don't want to hear it. Why? I got enough prior problems, okay? And it's like those police chase videos I see on TV, you know, massive police chases. Every now and then I'll flip through and I start getting tempted and I say, turn it off. Don't enjoy the distress of another person. I know he's a criminal. But most likely at the end he's going to smash into somebody's pickup truck. And you know, they're going to say nobody was seriously hurt. But somebody's pickup truck is damaged. Some criminal is under arrest. And we still have compassion for the criminal even though they're rotten people.
Okay.
Why do I want to see more bad things?
Okay, I think that's really good. And I 100% agree. Okay. I really do. I think that's great. But back to my original question. You know,
I have everybody participated though.
Yes, please. Everyone can and should participate. Yeah, it'd be nice. But
are you talking about?
Hey, throw things in. Don't take me seriously.
Are you talking about relativism?
Yeah. I'm going to kind of back up to that because my question is this: people see a certain lens of life. I mean, this is what they see: doctrine, dogma, church teaching. This isn't totally applicable to every moment, to every instant in life.
It's not.
It's not.
No, right.
You know, we have to interpret.
Yeah, how do you live the Immaculate Conception? You can't.
Right.
It's an historical fact. It's over with.
So you know, we have a subjective nature, of course. And how, you know, again, in trying to allow for this consistency, and I guess it's just not possible.
What's not possible?
Being consistent. Having an
of course it's possible.
All right. So we just have to keep subscribing and trying and striving, and it's just not going to be perfect, and it's messy, and that's
no.
That's the whole an example.
No, go ahead.
Can be.
An example
is right here. Look at the representation we have right here.
Oh, God. You need to read. Listen, I wrote a book called Perfection, which was, I claim, the only Catholic novel of the 20th or 21st century, if you exclude Sigrid Undset. Okay.
Oh, Perfection.
Mm-hmm. Because the concept was fascinating to me, and it takes place, so I can use it metaphorically, on another planet. And a man is sent on a diplomatic mission. He's a military man. He's sent on a diplomatic mission, and only he and a woman survive a crash on the planet, and they don't know what the mission is. And what they wind up doing is discovering a town, which is called Springfield, looks like 1950s Ohio, America. I mean, everybody's dressed that way. Everybody speaks that way.
There's a remake movie that came out exactly the same.
No, it was Pleasantville?
Pleasantville.
Yeah, I thought so. I found that rather interesting. Okay, it had some elements of mine. And these people essentially, because they don't know the mission, are never sent to the capital of the planet. And they're asked to stay in Springfield, and it turns out that they both had this obsession with 1950s America. They're both experts. So what they do is essentially get recruited by the town to give them lessons on how to become American. And this guy, and their key word is perfect. They don't want anything but perfect. Did we use the language perfectly? Did we do this perfectly? Did we have the high school dance perfectly? Is this a real representation? And what he comes to a conclusion is, in essence, is that this place is very evil, because what it's trying to is achieve perfection without God. And then, in an intentional rewrite of the book of Genesis, he decides to become Satan and destroy this town. But then the book of Genesis gets even more confusing when the mayor becomes Satan and actually reenacts the temptation in the Garden of Eden with actually fruit juice. Okay? And I made it as metaphorical possible with every religious aspect, and he goes through multiple religious conversions.
All right, so are we all right? Are we all right?
Well, the point I'm trying to make is about perfection is we dismiss it too easily. It is not necessarily easy to be perfect, but it is absolutely achievable. And I use the example of if the quarterback throws a touchdown, he could have done nothing better. If the man scores a goal and when he shoots against the goalie, he could have done nothing better. If the goalie deflects the goal, the puck, he could have done nothing better. These are perfect things. And our Lord tells us to be perfect. And if we're not going to be perfect, we're going to go to hell or we're going to go to purgatory. So when you dismiss the concept of consistency, no, of course not. You're dismissing the activity of God. Notice what I said to these people. I take the vow. Now, of course, they wouldn't take the vow. But as I've said, and I mean quite sincerely, there are 7 or 8 Catholics in this country who believe in God. I'm one of them. Because if you believe in God, you rely on God to achieve perfection. Which means you expect, if someone calls you in the middle of the night and asks for advice, you're not going to say, I don't know what to say. You're going to say, as I often say, okay, God, my lips are starting moving, putting the words in my mouth. And you do not prepare in advance what you're going to say, because God will give you the right word and you'll do it perfectly, because after all, that's his job and he's very good at it.
So you're
going
to say there's 7 or 8 people you know for a fact that they believe in God because they're willing to make that statement.
Maybe they've had a personal experience. And it's interesting. See, I give you the secret agenda of ARM, okay? Now, admit secret agendas. The official agenda of ARM is to teach and motivate Catholics to defend the spirit and the faith through right reason and the gospel.
Yeah.
But it's also teaching 3 things. Get them to believe 3 things. God, Satan, sin. Now, the closest thing that most Catholics actually believe in is sin, but for themselves. But they don't believe it in others. And the perfect example, I think of it, perfect, was the Terry Schiavo case. The people who were trying, at least intellectually, to defend her continuation of life, and would discuss these things on these talk shows or comment on them, and Rush Limbaugh was a good point. I don't like Rush Limbaugh, but all of a sudden he's become magnificent over this. He kept saying, well, I don't understand their motivation. Their motivation is sin. They're serving Satan. They're evil. And yet no one has brought this up. No one has ever said, do you realize that you're advocating the murder of an innocent child because you love evil? No, they must have goodwill. See, I would guarantee you 99.9% of the Catholics in this country would say the same thing. How could these people be so sick? Sick, not evil. They don't believe in sin for anybody else. Once you believe in sin for other people, the world becomes very clear. Then you understand why the vast majority of people do the vast majority of things. Most people don't believe in Satan. It's intellectual. But they've never had the experience of meeting him. They've never had the experience of a foretaste of hell. They've never had a satanic visit.
Have you ever had an experience like that?
Yes. And I know what Satan looks like. Okay, I've had a foretaste of hell, and I thank God for it.
Would you mind telling that story?
The main fear of hell is, I shouldn't, see, the word slipped out. The main pain of hell is fear. An absolute, numbing, overwhelming fear. A fear that absolutely immobilizes you. And a fear which is very similar to the dark night of the soul, which I don't know if you people have gone through as St. John's
Cross.
Right. Dark night of the soul, I went through. Very interesting. A short time, well, the stupidest statement I ever made once, and I'll just give you a story, a little spiritual background, not for bragging, but because I think it might help. Because I once took I mentioned Barbara to somebody here, okay? Barbara was a being in my life who ultimately got me fired from the state police, which at the time I thought was horrible and turned out to be really very good. But I say being because I still don't know if Barbara's human, and I don't know if Barbara was human at the time. Barbara may very well be a demon in human form. Because she had powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. And I mean, nobody could do some of the things she did. Okay.
And physically or just kidding?
Knowledge-wise, usually. Knowledge-wise, prediction, what's going to happen, things like that. And I brought Barbara to a healing service run by a priest. And I was asking for just demonic possession. Well, they said they had powers of discernment and could figure it out, so I didn't want to get healed. I didn't want her to get healed. But they said at the end, you got to go to one of these groups and get prayed over. So I said, okay. So I wound up going to a group with the priest. They said, you can't ask for the priest because then you think it's the priest that's doing the good thing and not God. And I didn't have anything to pray for, so he even said to me, how are things going? And I said, gee whiz, Father, I don't mean this as an insult, but you got people over there crippled and retarded and muscular dystrophy. And go work on them. I don't need you. Boy, what a mistake that was. Because when God gave me the dark night of the soul, I realized that what I should have been saying was, I need every single thing you send me, God. Because I had said up until that point, frequently, you know, God, thank you, you know, I have a well-trained tongue, and I have this, and I have that. Thank you for my abilities. I'm doing pretty well, and it's in your name. And after the dark night of the soul, I said, guide my fingernails growing and never leave a particle of me alone. And you know what? The hell with the rest of the world. Don't pay attention to them at all. 24 hours a day, watch me. 24 hours a day, watch every part of my body, every part of my soul. Never, never, never think of another human. I want you for me alone. I'm selfish. Please ignore everyone else. Because the dark night of the soul was the door shut. And the only way I can describe it is, I was shooting arrows and they were stopping dead before they could hit the target. And he said, okay, wise ass, you think you can do it on your own? Test it. And he did. And I said, okay, that's it. I don't need that anymore. Thank you. Also, if you want to know, my report takes to purgatory, which was very interesting. Because I prayed a prayer, and it's a scary one, but if you mean it, it'll ultimately be good for you. Make me a willing instrument of thy will. And I remember praying that one seriously, and purgatory then. And purgatory is an overwhelming sense of anxiety. I became the rat in a cage, and I mean that literally. I got up and walked around in circles as fast as I possibly could for hours. And when I was finished, I was different. I was what I am today, which is what I was not before. And I said, okay. I said, thank you very much. I'm glad that's over with. And then I foolishly said, if I need more, oh, I should have never said that. Because he said, yes, you do. Okay, I'm so hard, not this again. And every now and then when I feel a sort of a recharge coming, I'm going, oh, all right, no, 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 I remember the prayer. We'll accept it, we'll accept it, we'll accept it. But it's a very high-speed anxiety purging situation where everything's going way too fast and you have so much energy and so much activity that you literally cannot keep still. And those are the experiences. All right. So the point I'm making is I think God gave me these experiences to say, let's get it straight. Just so, as I joke, sometimes my other secret agenda, Vaughn, is to destroy your faith and replace it with knowledge. Because those who have experienced things on first hand no longer have faith. They have knowledge. So, again, one of my trick things with ARM was to get people into the situation where they would start defending the faith, feel confident because they have been trained, feel motivated, and then they're going to hit this moment where all of a sudden they haven't got an answer. And they haven't gotten me. And what they're going to do is maybe for the first time in their lives, pray sincerely. And then all of a sudden they're going to hear words coming out of their mouth, almost the gift of tongues, which they didn't know they could say. And that's when they're going to realize God exists. And I've had people tell me this. Chief, and it was just like you said, I opened my mouth and I was listening. The first time I heard the word is when I said it myself. I had no conception of what I, but it was all right. And I said, right, now you know God exists. It's like putting your finger in the socket on the electricity. Now you know electricity really exists. So what I'm really trying to do is set people up for a fall. But they're secret agendas. Of course they talk about them, you see. And so all of these things ultimately, once you get to the existence of God, a lot of things fall into place. Once you become the true believer, because for too many people, God is an abstract concept. He's not personality. He's not something which is alive and living and can power you. Because think about this. If the only thing that you control, and this is the only thing you control, is sin, God controls everything else. How can you fail? Now, again, I don't mean to say that the hockey goalie blocks every goal, okay? Because God has his plan on why you should lose certain games, all right? I know that. I don't know what the plans are, but he's got his plan. And no matter what you do, you're still going to lose. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about saying the right word to the right person at the right time. Why do you fail? You fail because God didn't put the right words in your mouth. And why didn't you do that? Because you didn't ask him. Why didn't you ask him? Because you don't have the faith. And you see, one of the things I did at one of the conferences, and this is one of the reasons I'm not invited back very frequently, I believe, is I said, the first half of my conference might be complimentary, the second half will be insulting. Leave when I tell you to. Nobody did. Everybody laughed. I said, okay, now, I'm going to give you six verses from the Bible. And of course, it's a waste of time for me to give you these six verses, because these six verses will establish various different Catholic dogmas. And of course, you all know them immediately, so I'll just read the verse and then skip it. I was being sarcastic, of course. So I read the verse and says, that proves the veneration of the Blessed Mother, doesn't it? I don't have to explain it to you. And now I end up being sarcastic again. I said, well, maybe there's a Protestant League office if you can get it. Let me explain it to you. Once I explain it, they see it. Then I ask them, okay, it's in the Bible. Now you agree it's in the Bible. It's been there. You might have read this 450 times, and the truth never got through to you. Why? Well, very simply, God's forsaken you. And I mean that sincerely. Because you know what? You've forsaken him. And you know what? You better get down on your knees tonight and be terrified, because you don't have the proper relationship with God. As I sometimes say, and I don't mean it ironically, why did God write a book 2,000 years ago that nobody's understood until now? Why is it that I come up with the insights that no one else has? Well, my reasoning is it's needed 100 years from now.
It's what?
100 years from now. I figure it'll take 100 years from now to me to be accepted, by which time I'll be dead, and therefore it won't cause any problems with pride. Okay? So when my stuff becomes generally accepted among Catholic populace, it's when it will be needed. So 100 years from now, maybe the time of the great apostasy. Maybe they'll have to be defending their faith. But the point I'm making is once again, if I can find these things there, then everybody says, oh yeah, how come other people didn't find it? Like I was trying to do with these guys on the Matthew 18, but I couldn't get them to cooperate. That's temporal punishment. But ask what? 4,000 out of 4,000 priests wouldn't see it. Once you point it out to them, they say, yeah. Oh yeah, my God, it's right there. So tell me, how come you've given 1,400 sermons on this? You've read it 250 times and the truth has never come out. Well, it isn't God's fault. It better be yours. Your relationship with God isn't right. And that's scary. That's really scary. Okay? My relationship with God is right. I'll go to hell for rejecting him, but it won't be for neglecting him. Okay? I still got a good chance of going to hell. But it'll be quite different why other people go to hell. I'll be talking to people in hell and they'll be saying, I never paid attention. Obviously, I paid attention and looked the other way. That was my problem. But I can't claim I'm not paying attention. I can't claim that God's not working through me. Of course he is. And I said that before today, and I know people laughed about it, you know, and I said, yeah, I'm from God. You know, Vin Lewis is from God. Vin Lewis is from God. Okay? Now, you can take it one of two ways. You can think in the prophetic sense on Elijah and all that stuff. I don't mean Elijah, you know, but in Elijah-like, prophetic. Okay, fine. But you can also take it the very simple way. As I said, essentially, at the rendezvous, if you don't see Christ in me, you're damned. And if I don't see Christ in you, I'm damned. But I always find it funny when I say, I'm one of the least of the brothers of Christ, you better treat me that way. People usually say to me, I could say the same thing. I say it. They never do. Because they never claim to be a brother of Christ. It's scary. Really scary.
They won't say what?
They won't claim to be a brother or sister of Christ. I tell you, don't feed me, don't give me something to drink, don't provide my shelter, and you're going to hell. I'm absolutely serious about it. I couldn't be more serious about
it. We're all set.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, somebody won't. Okay. That's like a couple of years in purgatory, okay? Well, see, but the point I'm trying to make is, think about it. Isn't that what we're all supposed to be saying? Isn't that what we're all supposed to be saying to every other person?
Absolutely.
You can't turn your back on me. I'm Christ. I need help. See, Mike Malone, some most of you know of, and unfortunately is dead, and God bless him.
Who's he?
Mike Malone once said that he would give a talk at a Catholic conference. He didn't want to give one. He said, write it for me. Make it tough, and I'll give every word. Now, I wrote it, I made it tough, and he didn't read it, because it was really tough. And what it said was, turn to the person next to you in the audience, and say, if you need it, I got $1,000, and it's yours, and mean it. Go ahead. Otherwise, don't expect to go to heaven. Now, the point I said was, one of the real problems with this is that to loan the money, you have to actually confirm that the person needs it and is not going to spend it on drink, which means you actually have to get involved in the life of another human being. And you know what? That's the last thing we Catholics want to do. My God, you don't understand. I got to go home and cut the lawn, and then I got to do this. And the baseball season's starting, and you want me to get involved with a human being? I'm too busy going to church. See? And what I'm saying is, do it. Really do it and mean it and say it right now. And it's interesting enough, you know, your uncle called me up and pulled it on me. Did you know your uncle John did that? He called me up and asked me for $1,000. And I hesitated and said, if you need it, take dollars. And he said, I was just testing you. And I said, no, I do it. Thank God, thank God, thank God. See, but the point, yeah, but the point I'm trying to make is, you've really got to take those things seriously. And then the perfection comes. Now think about it, and again, personal story. When I was on the state police, because I sometimes get these, you know, social security records. My last year on the state police, I made, I think, about $27,000 with two jobs. And now that was in 1973. So this would be about $45,000, okay? And it's very interesting to look at my social security things, which, you know, start very low, get to that peak, in the last like 7 years, it's zero. Okay, and the year when it actually, I made $180, I think, in 1992, and $240 the year before. Okay,
how do you live?
This is exactly the point I'm going to tell you, because I remember a priest saying in a sermon once, "You've got to take God seriously and His promises." An interesting point. And after trying to get about 15 jobs and either never getting them or getting fired the next day because the state police was carrying on this vendetta against me, which I thought was utterly hilarious, but they actually called up businesses I was working for and said straight up. Because I noticed the secretary would tell me, and she would name the guy who called, and he was the guy who actually worked with me. if Ben Lewis is on your payroll tomorrow, you're out of business the next day, we're sending someone down to check. Straight out intimidation. So I went, I still remember it, I came out on the porch of my Ben trailer, which existed, and I looked up in heaven and I said, it is not slow, Floyd, I really have tried. I've tried to get a job, I've tried to work here, I've tried to do that, so now, you're in charge. From now on, I'm not going to worry about what I'm going to eat or drink or wear, you are. You know, I'm not a very good son, but I'm your son. You take care of me. I'm going on divine welfare, and you know what? I'll try to do your will more, but even so, you still owe it to me because Christ didn't put any conditions on those promises. Pay off. And as I said, I'm the best well-off poor person I know because I always think that somehow, I don't understand why I seem to only deposit $50 in the bank, but there's always $300 in there. It never seems as if the math is correct. And I often think that God hits the bank at night and changes history because it really doesn't seem as if I have the right amount of money to live, but I've been living on essentially nothing for now since about 1986 or 7. Okay, I think the last time I earned any real money was probably in about 92 or 93. Why? Because I took his promises seriously, like St. Francis of Assisi. And you get things like this. And, you know, this is interesting, because this is the first one of these things I never really cared about selling anything. I thought you said you'd have tapes available for the debates. What happened? No? You forgot? It's his fault. Okay, fine. But the point is, this is the first time I never really cared about selling anything. You know, because I said, it doesn't really matter anymore. But previously, I used to try to sell like crazy. And I would come back and count all the money and feel wonderful. And it was legitimate. I mean, you know. But the point is, now I'm actually so secure in these things that don't worry about it.
All right, can I ask you this question to follow up? So what is your ultimate mission in life? And don't, I understand to get to heaven. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's know God, love God, serve mm-hmm. God, be happy in this world next. But more specific, more applicable to the life that we're living here today. Just in terms of...
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. I have a image which I use, all right? And by the way, I will say this. Let me make it as clear as possible. I do not consider any inherent merit of mine to be the reason why I have been chosen to do what I do. I do often think, as a hypothetical possibility, that we are not the most important creatures in the universe. That even though our Lord and Savior sanctified our race by becoming part of it, the real contest is still between God and Satan. And that ultimately Satan continues to give God conditions, asking God to prove his majesty. And God accepting the conditions still continues to prove these things. So I actually wrote a play on this, which was produced. This is The Curses of Adam and Eve right after they get out of the Garden of Eden. It's a comedy.
Why would you do that? It sounds like a sadist.
Which?
For God to want to do that.
No, remember that God's love for creatures cannot end, and Satan was one of his best. The love of God never can end. What causes pain in hell is, in essence, the rejection of God. And as people say, and I accept completely, the gates of hell are locked from the inside, not the outside. I hold that anybody who wants to get out of hell can at any time, or will at least be allowed at one point at the last judgment to get out. And I have a tape on it.
Oh, really?
I'll go into a moment if you want to. But the point I'm trying to make is, one of my theories is this. Like, remember the book of Job? There's Satan up in heaven saying, you're not a Job guy. You treat him very well. No wonder he's, you know, reverent. And God says, okay, you know, I don't think that's really true. So why don't you give him a whole bunch of trials and tribulations and pains and stuff like that? And let's see what happens, but don't kill him. And Satan says, okay, I'll do it. And Satan subjects him to all these things, and we have the trials and the patience of Job. Well, I think that Satan said, okay, you think that you can make someone useful to other Catholics out of anyone? And God says, sure, do it out of Vin Lewis. Because no one can make anybody worthwhile out of Vin Lewis. And God said, oh, I can do that. And Satan is still gnashing his teeth waiting for me to fall. And the reason I don't fall is not because of my own merit. It's exactly because of the grace of God holding me up, because he's showing off to Satan that he can make scum like me into something worthwhile, which is completely supernatural. The point is, I have this metaphor which I use. There are, in essence, three classes of people. The common people, the elect, and the elite. Now, the elect are those who are, now you've got to be very careful here, but the Catholic view of predestined to get to heaven. And what I mean by that is predestination is a perfectly legitimate Catholic view if you understand it correctly. It does not violate man's free will. What I mean is by this, when the moment you were conceived, again, if we follow the pro-life I prefer pro-birth or anti-abortion position correctly. What you argue is that no life is ever an accident. It requires a direct infusion of a soul by God. And at that point, not only does he fix gender, color of eyes, and everything else, he fixes your entire life if you go according to God's plan. So the analogy I would use is sometimes you see these little kids running around, you know, Harvard class of 2014, which means that if he goes along with his regular classmates, he will be entering into college, if he enters college, in 2014. We all understand that. So in the same sense, you have sort of imprinted on you entry into heaven scheduled for 2075, class of 75, and there's a place up there for you. There's a place with your name on it. If you cooperate with God's plan, you will die at that time and get there. Now, of course, commit suicide, which you have a perfect privilege to, you screw up the plan. If you disagree with the plan, if you do this and do that, you'll screw up the plan. And God, and I wrote a thing on this called The God of Time and the God of History. And when I said, think of God, instead of being out of time, think of him being endlessly in time, sort of weaving a tapestry. And what happens is, someone comes along, hits him in the shoulder, and one of the colors is wrong. So rather than redo it, he now has to change the image of a vase to a dog. And then halfway through, then he has to change it to a deer. Then he has to change it to a giraffe. So every time you screw up, he says, okay, now I got to put somebody else there. So as an example, if it is predestined for you to be part of the salvation of someone else by talking to a person on August 3rd, 2007 at a bus stop, and you decide that day to sleep late as an act of sloth, God will say, okay, I need a substitute. And like a football coach, you'll send somebody else in to meet that person at that time. So that person will never, that person will definitely have his plan. You were part of that plan. You fouled it up. He put somebody else in your place.
Am I screwed because I fouled it up?
Oh, not screwed in the sense of damned, but absolutely a sin. You see, this is the whole point about sloth and stuff like that. And one of the points I think somebody tried to bring up before was the whole kind of, that was this I thought was going to be the approach of evangelism. And I wrote some notes. And what I said was that I advocated the Scrooge approach of evangelism. Once you found out that, you know, Tiny Tim was crippled and Bob Cratchit was poor, you kicked the door open. You didn't say, well, Bob, if there's anything I can do, you just showed up with all the presents. And you went to visit your nephew, even though he had invited you and didn't expect you, and you just said, may I come in? Scrooge didn't sit back and enjoy himself. He kicked doors down to people and did good. And that's one form of evangelism. But the other one, which also goes on, is wait for the opportunities because God will send them to you. So in other words, when you need it, God will put the right person in your place to work on. Do what you can, let it go, and you've done the perfect job. Okay? You've said the right word.
So when do we have enough confidence that we've done enough?
No.
That we're going to meet?
You don't have confidence that you've done enough.
I know.
You simply say,
sufficient.
No. Have I done a good thing? Yes. Did I do it for a good reason? Then I can't possibly be punished for it. Thank you very much, God. I think I'll relax now.
For a moment.
Not necessarily for a moment. Is there a ball game on? Watch the ball game and have fun. See, this is what I'm saying. Relax. There's this phrase, and I don't know who it is. God loves the man who can sleep at night and put his problems on God's shoulders. Okay? And I think that's a very important prospect. I keep going back to it. Have fun. I mean real, honest to goodness fun. Thank God you were eating ice cream. It's a wonderful thing to see. You understand? You say, why? Because it's a sensation which brings about fun. We played racquetball before. That brings about fun. You do various different things that bring about fun, you know. Now, if while you're doing fun, someone comes along and wants to discuss the Bible, fine, stop the fun. But you know what you do is you look for opportunities and accept those that come, but you don't have to, it's specifically forbidden to go door to door in the Gospel of St. Luke, which I love, okay, even though the Jehovah's Witnesses do it. So wait for the opportunity. Say, okay, Lord, make of me what you will, make that willing instrument, put those people in my path who are supposed to be. He's going to do it anyway, but now you're going to get credit. Because now you're saying, do it the way you're supposed to. And the role that I was trying to talk about was this concept of the elect and the elite, and that's how I got into predestination. And what I mean by predestination is we all have a plan by which we're supposed to get to heaven. Cooperate with it, and you'll be there predestined. However, not cooperate with it, and you go to hell. You're not predestined to go to hell.
Can I talk about that? Let's say you do go to hell, you can get out of hell?
Oh, yeah. But I'll give that in a moment. Let me just finish with my three images. My three images are, the common person goes to hell. The elect person goes to heaven. But the elect person goes to heaven because he follows what the elite does. And the image I used, which I like very much, is you've got a darkened room, the lights go out, it's a very big old mansion, and the lights are out, and let's say you think the place is going to catch on fire, so you got to get out. But you were only in the place once, you don't know where the furniture is, you're afraid of stumbling over things. One person who knows the way because he lives here lights one match. and says, follow me. Now, you can't really see much of the room, but you can follow that one light. And you know, he goes 4 feet down this way, turns this way. You go 4 feet down, they turn this way. Then you do this, and then you do that. That one little light doesn't illuminate the room, but it does allow you to follow the leader who knows the way to salvation. Okay? And the elite are those who light those lights. They don't have floodlights, because the floodlight would be too much human knowledge that we would learn about God. And it's, you know, the old St. Augustine story with the kid, you know, putting the ocean into the hole. The story is that he comes and he finds his kid taking ocean in the bucket and pouring into a hole on the beach. And he says to the kid, what are you trying to do? And he says, I'm emptying the ocean into this hole. And St. Augustine says, well, you can't do that. And he says, well, I can come closer doing that than you can understanding the Trinity. Which at that point, I think St. Augustine said, I'm not even going to try anymore. As I always say about things like that, I use the average dry formulas in the creed and go no farther, lest I fall into heresy. I try not to think about those things which I cannot reason on. My position on the Last Judgment, if you're interested, is this. And it struck me that if you... Catholicism is like an arch, at least the doctrines are, in the sense that if you move any stone, the whole thing falls. So you think maybe not at first, but if you destroy the Immaculate Conception, it's really only three steps away denying the divinity of our Lord. Okay, and the same thing with the Assumption. And then you think the Real Presence, and then you think sacraments, and all these things are tied together except for one, the Last Judgment. Throw it out and nothing else changes.
How do you figure that out?
Well, think about it. What else would possibly change if there were no Last Judgment? You die, you get judged, you go to heaven, and then you stay there. Right? So now all of a sudden, there's no, hey, come on, wake up, we're going to go get judged again.
No, because it's doctrine, it's best.
No, no, you didn't hear me. Remove it and it changes nothing else, right? It's the only one. It's totally, it is unique.
If I remove it, then I take away church, a teaching.
No, you're not understanding me. It's related to no other thing. It sticks out like a sword. It sticks out all by itself. It's a sui generis, to use the Latin term. It is a thing all by itself. What I'm saying is, if you remove the assumption, why you destroy the divinity of Christ? Because what you say is that he who was perfect man would not preserve the body of his mother who gave him flesh from being eaten by the rats and the worms. Since all men would do this if they could, and a perfect man would do it perfectly, and a perfect man who happened to be God had the power to do it, therefore he would do it, so therefore if he didn't do it, he isn't God, and it's attacked the divinity of Christ, and the whole thing collapses. See? And
can
the point... Yeah, sure.
Illini won, cards lost.
Yeah, you're kidding me.
Nope, they sure
is. You know what the really bad thing was?
How much?
You know what the really bad thing was? Really?
You're just watching.
John Paul II said that the University of Illinois would win over his dead body. And I'm sorry. I'm assuming that it worked out. What? It's a joke.
Oh!
He's dead.
I know. No, 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 but I thought you said his body.
When you think about the percentage of Catholics and the percentage of Polish Catholics, this Chicago, it would only make sense.
Oh, you mean sort of as a consolation? Isn't that interesting? You might be right. Who knows?
Would you mind having a little bit of the tea just to see the Pope? Can we, would you go out? Yes, good.
I'm not interested.
Not at all?
No.
Really?
No.
Negative?
No, I liked some parts of them and some didn't, but the point is, once again, I can only see it being slightly depressing and maybe tremendously boring.
I think it's...
Go ahead.
It's kind of monumental. I mean, the fact that...
Yeah, you know, I really...
He's been our leader for the past...
I anticipated how I would find the news out, because we all knew it was coming.
How did you know?
I got to tell you, because it was very special.
Yes, Pete.
In 99, I went to Rome with a friend of mine who's a priest, Father Jim Seattle McDowell, and I went with a buddy of mine who was contemplating priesthood, was Father Bill Coffin. Now, and I just called Father Jim this morning to see how he was doing. And he started sharing, you know, what to look for, what's going to happen. And while I'm on the phone with him, I get another call. And I never patch out a phone call to take another call, but I did this time. And it was Father Bill calling me from Rochester, New York, to tell me that the Pope died. And I just, you know, you get news like this, and you know that no matter where you are for the rest of your life, you're going to remember what happened to you at that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It was just
this
beautiful.
This is today, 2:35, 2:30.
It happened at 2:37, and Bill called me at 10:30.
2:37 p.m.
This is about the time I saw on MSNBC.
What about, how do you feel about adoration? I thought like Eucharistic adoration, we go there tonight, boom, do an hour, holy hour.
I'm not sure what you mean. I'm in favor of it.
You're I'm not being sort of just silly. I mean, as far as just going, and would you be interested in going to that?
What, is there something going on now?
Well, just the fact that the Pope died, and I don't know, just...
You have to find a place that's open.
St. Martin's Tour
is the Blessed Dragon exposed?
24-7.
I would be, you know, I'm all for it, but I would prefer if I could get a book, that's all. Because that's all you can do is read in front.
There's plenty of books.
What would you enjoy buying? You're the guest. We want you to be doing what you want.
You
want to
see Louisville?
I do.
Oh, now you're
I've seen a significant part of it.
But not all.
Thank God for short memories.
We'll take you to
PT's and
call it a day.
I'm reaching
sort of end of endurance. I want to go to sleep soon.
Really?
Yeah. The problem with these things is it's not so much physically tiring, although you get physically tired. It's the being on that does it.
Okay, please.
Yeah, at work, I deal with a lot of my coworkers and discuss religion and so forth with them. One of the biggest problems that I end up dealing with or having to face really is relativism. It's people basically saying, well, how do you know God exists? And how do you know that your religion is a true religion, this, that, and the other thing? And you can use the classical proofs, and it does no good because at the very basis of it is really a denial of the concept of revelation, the concept of God. You probably know more about what I'm
talking about. You're talking about those Thomistic proofs?
Well, those and really any other ones, even
how philosophically inclined are people that you speak to?
Not really. I really don't even deal with philosophical.
See, I developed a philosophical proof for the existence of God, which I feel is completely irrefutable. And I thought it was very funny that I was working at the time in a craft shop, and I decided that I would use this. It had like 18, 19 steps. And it only involves two assumptions, mm-hmm. which most people will give immediately. And I said, I will ask you one step each day, and then you agree with it, we'll go on to the next step. And I figured by 18 they would be Catholics. Because it not only proves the existence of God, but Catholicism and the Incarnation, which I found very interesting, that there's an absolute mandatory necessity for the Incarnation in the nature of creation. Mm-hmm. Okay, which, and not only that, it came out even like it had to be 12 apostles or approximately that many. It's really absurd. But the point is, not absurd, but astounding. And the point was, I got to like step four, and the boss fired both of them, which I always thought was very interesting that Satan was working in the world again. But what I'm suggesting to you is, if you wish, on this, just when I get home, ask for infallibility, and I'll send it to you. But go ahead with your point anyway.
Basically, you can deal with, you can go through the various proofs, but it's kind of pointless because people have this concept of truth as being relative.
Yeah. I think what you
and
may
that,
be...
That to me is... I mean,
you may be running into a problem of the following, that you're making the mistake that what they're saying is true to them.
Oh, actually, I don't.
Okay, you believe they're lying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then this sometimes works. Like I said with these guys taking the vow of, if I fail tonight, I'll join his church. Ask them to take the vow that they're telling the truth. Now, I have found that it sounds sort of silly because you think if somebody's lying, they continue to lie. But I can tell you as a police officer that very frequently people going into court and taking the oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, even on something they can never get caught in, I could see an expression change in their face, and all of a sudden now, even though they were absolutely committed to lie, they would tell the truth.
Yeah.
So if you ask a person to take a vow, now you've got to make it serious vow. Tell me the truth. In so much as you honor your mother and hope that she will be saved, by that, tell me that what you're going to tell me now is the truth. Now, I found a lot of people will not take the oath, but at that point, they also admit they're not telling the truth. And like the closest one I remember, a Protestant telling me, I thought it was a great quote. And I dealt with him over a period of, I think, 3 or 4 weeks, and it's funny, he called me like 5 times a day, 20-minute gaps. And then they called me for 2 days, and then he was really impulsive, and he was fun. And it was like fun. And I said, okay, we've had all these fun and games. From now on, I want you to tell me one thing. Everything you've said is true, and everything you say in the future is going to be true. And he said, Vin, this is religion. Nobody ever tells the truth on religion. Great quote. And the point was, okay, now I know it was only fun and games and had nothing to do seriously. The concept of asking a person on his honor is a very interesting thing because you're really asking something associated with his soul and his pure identity. And even the most dishonest person doesn't want to dishonor himself by going against the vow. So try that and see if the voices and the messages and the words change, okay? Because very frequently it will. And very frequently it may not talk to you anymore, but even then that's a victory.
I have, like, there's one fellow that I'm working with, and his name is Don, and I've proved to him. Now, obviously, he's not a goodwill, but it's just really for my own, knowledge, really. Proved to him that the Catholic Church is the true church. He will not accept it, and he bases all his objections on the concept that we cannot always know the truth with absolute certainty, and that truth is a matter of perception.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a matter of objective reality.
Okay, I would agree to him that we cannot always know the truth with all certainty, but there are certain truths we can know with certainty.
Well, see, that's what he was saying. He was essentially basing his whole thing on we cannot know any truth with absolute certainty.
We know with absolute certainty that we can't?
That's what I responded to, and he said, except for that.
Okay. Now, I would suggest at that point you say, are you totally sincere? If you are, you won't object to what I'm going to do. Reach into his pocket, take his wallet, take his money out, and keep his credit cards. And don't make it a joke. This is the point. People then say, then I give it back. No, don't ever give it back. And say, now remember, when the police come, and you accuse me of this, the one thing you have to say to the police is, I'm really not certain he did it. Okay? Or, if you want to do it another way, step on his foot. And say, can't be certain that you're feeling pain, right?
Mm-hmm.
You think? You can't be certain. Oh, get out of, come on, don't be stupid. Because you see, pain and money are real realities. See? Now, the point is, if you even want to make it a hypothetical, therefore, if I reached into your pocket and took your wallet and you called the police, you would testify to the police that you're not certain I took it, right? Well, see. Now, how about if I do it? See? And I mean this. Now, one woman did this with her brother that I thought was very good. And he was so adamant that he kept saying, yes, I don't know you have the money. And she took it, expecting him at any moment to say, give it back to me. I don't know it exists. So she said, she didn't know what to do. So she came up with what I thought a tremendously ingenious solution. When he wasn't present, she gave the money to her nephews, his son, and said, don't say where it came from. And then she sent a check to the brother for the money she took, saying, cash the check if you accept the reality of the debt. And I thought that was a marvelous situation.
Well, actually, what I did with them was kind of in the same line.
Okay.
So I spent the entire day, when I dealt with them, everything was totally subjective. And he would ask me a question, and I would be like, I don't know.
Yeah, but the point is, ask him, you're really, again, I know what you're saying, and I know you like to play these games, but on your honor, tell me. You don't really mean that, do you? Okay. You can't,
I was going to say, can you unpack the getting out of hell? Because I'm not understanding that. If I may be so bold, perhaps that is not only false statement that you made, but radical.
No. Okay. Again, people... No. The point... I go back to it again, and I think the key point is necessary to make. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you say you had something else? All right, if you do, interrupt. The key point, and I think it's essential to understand, is that once again, you can remove the last judgment without it affecting any other doctrine or teaching. It's the only one that stands by itself. It's odd. It's not connected to anything else. And I thought about that, and that bothered me. So therefore, I examined the concept of the last judgment. And the last judgment says, okay, you're going to have this particular judgment, you're going to go to heaven or hell, and we're going to have it done all over again. Why? So we can all see God's justice being manifested. Oh, Lord, what is this, a joke? Because at least St. Thomas Aquinas was taught that when you go in heaven and you look down on the people in hell, you'll understand God's justice being manifested and you'll actually rejoice that it was done. Okay, I understand that. But why do we need to do it again? So then I looked at it and I took something literal. And at that time, all the people of all the nations of all the earth will be put into one place. Which means what? They will no longer be in heaven and hell. Instead, they will probably be on earth. They will be reunited with their bodies. Hey, why are we getting reunited with our bodies? I know that it's a fulfillment of the incarnation and we're created body and souls, and I understand all of that. But how come we didn't get reunited with our bodies earlier? Why don't, I die, and why doesn't God take my body into heaven? I mean, after all, I'm supposed to be body and soul for all eternity. Why have I got to wait around for the end of the world before I get my body? It doesn't make sense to me. Now, I'm not saying everything God does have to make sense, but I'm saying that reason is a proper thing to approach these things on. So I said, okay, gee, we're all going to be in our bodies, And we're all going to be in one place. It's going to be very crowded. I can only see everybody shoulder to shoulder, okay? And we're all going to see everybody else's life, which means it's going to be rather boring and tremendous activity. But then it occurred to me, this gives an opportunity for baptism for those who were never baptized. So, I posit the following position will occur. Everybody's going to get out, and God's going to say, not I condemn you or I allow you, but okay, everybody, make a choice. Here's your choice. You want heaven, and if you're not baptized, go over there, get baptized, kneel in front of the Blessed Mother, check off the list on the Immaculate Conception, and you get in. And you in hell, you know, you in heaven already baptized, you go back through that door, and you people who want to go to hell, go ahead. You're on your own. And one would say, okay then, but the only obvious tremendous flaw is this, is why would anybody go to hell who'd already been there? Well, why do people spend their entire lives in torment on earth and then go to hell? Which is exactly what you saw here earlier. You saw guys who are tormented by their beliefs because they're literally stupid and literally evil. And they were confronted with the truth, and instead they chose to continue their evil. And if they continue that way, as I always say, they'll have a nice miserable life, which is very good preparation for hell. Because think about this. The crucifix says that our Lord and Savior spent 3 hours on the cross and about another 8 hours being beaten up for every single one of us, including those guys. Now you think God sits up helplessly in heaven and says, oh, I wish these guys would make the right decision? Or do you think God makes their life a living hell so that they come to Him? God makes their life a living hell because He didn't die for them for nothing. And that means including dreams.
What do you think about invincible ignorance?
No such thing, but that's another point.
That's now, in the Catechism, though.
What?
It's in the Catechism.
The Catechism is not an official document of the Catholic Church, in the sense that it's not authorized.
The Catechism is not authorized by the Catholic Church?
No, because again, understand, the deposit of faith was closed at the end of St. John. So therefore, since no apostle said the Church has the right to put out a catechism, it is a matter of opinion.
But it has the
knee
or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that really. That, you know what that is? Yes, right.
Yeah,
do you know what a Nihil Upstart is? It's an ink pattern. It's an ink pattern. It means nothing. Oh, excuse me. It means an ink pattern. What if I wrote in the beginning of your catechism everything in this book is false? Would that make it false? Answer my question. What if I wrote in the front cover of your book, of the Catechism, everything in this book is false? Would that make it false?
No.
No. So if something on it says everything in it is true, that doesn't make it true either, does it?
It doesn't say that. No.
That's not what I'm asking. The point I'm making is, a Nihil Upstart is the opinion of one person who has the job to do so. Now, I find it very funny that we'll go around and talk about how horribly the corrupt the Church is. Everybody's wrong, everybody's wrong, everybody's wrong. Oh, it's approved by the Church, it's Church official, it must be right. Excuse me, why do we think that the censors of books in various different situations are free from the corruption that seems to infect 95% of the rest of the clergy?
That doesn't mean what Nihil Upstart means, though. That doesn't mean that it's definitely right.
It means nothing in it is objectionable.
Right.
I don't see the difference.
Nothing is contrary to Catholic.
I don't see the difference. I don't see the difference. Maybe you do. I can't possibly see the difference between nothing in here is heretical and everything in here is good. I can't see the difference, but that's another story. My point, let me finish why my situations are not heretical, okay? In case you don't know, Joan of Arc one time was going through, I think, Orleans when someone came out to her and said, my baby has just died.
Would you like anything else to eat?
No, thank you. We were taking her to the church because the doctor said she was in danger of death, to have her baptized as an infant, but she died. Joan of Arc raised the child from the dead and baptized the child. Then the child died. Where did the child go the first time he died?
Limbo.
Which is part of hell, is it not?
No.
It's not. Gee, I thought it was because that's where Abraham... Excuse me. Where did Abraham go before our Lord rose from the dead?
Limbo.
And what does the Apostles' Creed say? What does the Apostles' Creed say? Hell.
Dead.
Hell. The word is hell.
Sheol also.
The word is hell.
The Greek Sheol.
Okay. Are you familiar with St. John Bosco?
Yeah, somewhat.
Do you know that St. John Bosco raised the boy from the dead so he confessed him from a mortal sin?
No, I didn't know that.
Yes. Where did the boy go when he died in the state of mortal sin?
Sheol.
Where did he get out of?
Hell.
And where did he then go?
Heaven.
Right.
So God gave St. John Bosco the power to take him out of jail?
Absolutely.
After he'd been judged?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That, you know, I've never heard that. And I've
there are many stories of such a nature. The point is, you can get out of hell.
But not after Christ came and allowed, you know, I mean, it was a...
John Bosco lived in the 1860s.
Yeah. In fact, many people think I'm his personification.
No, demonification.
That would be your opinion.
The point I'm trying to make is, if we have one case of a person getting out of hell, then anybody can get out of hell. So the point is, why would people stay in hell? For the same reason that they go now. Because of the rejection of heaven. They would rather, as John Milton said, they would rather reign in hell than serve in heaven. And they would. They would rather be the individual in hell than they would rather be the clone of a Catholic saint in heaven. Listen, just let me give you one point. Ask this question, I'm sorry I didn't think of it, I meant to. Ask this question and make it sincere of the Protestants you know. If it were a requirement to be a Catholic in order to get to heaven, would you become one? Every Protestant I've ever asked that question of has said no. I'd rather go to hell. And when I say I'm serious,
No.
When I say I'm deadly serious, they say I'm deadly serious too, and then you realize they are.
Repeat that.
If the only way to get to heaven were to become a Catholic, would you become one?
It's kind of bizarre for them to say no.
You understand?
Yes.
Think about it. What you saw today, and I hope you realized it, was Satan working in three young men. It would have been working in the fourth, but he wouldn't work at all. The point is that you saw Satan functioning in this room. Have no doubt about it. What did I say in the beginning? Can't say yes, can't say no. Now, at a certain point, they did, and I said, why? Because at that point, Satan left them, understanding, if I get up their shoulder. To give you a real quick story, and I thought it was great. I was in Minnesota, and I was giving a talk, and I used the merciless servant story. And I literally said, Protestants can't explain this. And a guy interrupted my talk and said, I can. And I said, you could actually explain that from a Protestant point of view? He said, yes. I said, that's very interesting. I'll acknowledge you first when the questions and answers come. So the question and answer come, and I said, I have a question for you now. You know the merciless servant story? Yes. And you can explain it? Yes. I said, oh my gosh, he's saying yes. And I said, and you can explain this from a Protestant point of view? Yes. And you can explain it so it'd be totally consistent with Protestant theology? Yes. And you have total confidence in this? Yes. And God's speaking through you? Yes. I said, whoa. So I got to go one more. So I said, so now, the moment you explain this, and I show how contradictory it is, and how wrong you are, then you will admit that the spirit which is actually motivating you is Satan and not God, won't you? And he went, and he couldn't open his mouth. And he got up and left with the assistance of his friend without saying another word. And I said, that was a tremendously strong demon. Because it managed him to say yes like 7 times in a row.
Yeah.
And that must have caused him tremendous pain. But it got to the point that he no longer could sustain this guy. And he could not even open his mouth. And see, the point I'm trying to make is, I'm not any holy roller. But if you don't think you see Satan functioning every day in the lives of others, it is like I said, believe in God, Satan, and sin. You need to believe in those three things to fight your way to heaven.
Agreed.
Church militant. You must understand the presence of Satan in others.
Question on the floor. Question on the floor. You know what would probably be good? What if we went to a place where there was sort of more proclivity to sin than others, and we just kind of have a conversation?
I think that's great. Maybe a brothel would be good.
All right. No, in all seriousness. What if we went to a place like that right now and continued this conversation there and allowed for a little more evangelization in that sense?
Wow, my gosh. If we go to any place like that, the music's going to be so loud that you won't be able to hear anything. And the girls will be too attractive. I won't be able to talk. Leave us not into temptation, okay?
And that concludes this audio CD. We hope that it has been beneficial. Thank you for listening. To obtain additional copies of this CD or any other products which ARM offers, please contact us at ARM, 55 Palin Road, that's P as in Paul, A-L-E-N as in Nancy, Road, number 3, Hopewell Junction, New York, 12533. Thank you and God bless.